We plan our work and we work our plan. That's our mantra in Normal, going way back, you know, several mayors ago. And that has served Normal well.
Pod BN.
Elections Edition. Here we go. From the Play Normal Esports Studio, this is Pod BN. My name is Justin.
And I'm Tyson.
And we have some exciting news to announce. We are happy to introduce a new sponsor to Pod BN.
It is Little Beaver Brewery.
Little Beaver Brewery. You're going to remember we had Chad, the founder of Little Beaver, on our podcast, and they liked it. They liked the idea of what we were doing, and they said, how can we help? And they stepped up, so we are happy to have them as a sponsor.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Such innovative beers that they have. I like in particular the Wainbow's Pale Ale.
Yeah.
Nice, smooth glass of beer.
I lean towards the cream ale. I think they have one called Jitters that has some vanilla and coffee flavor to it. That's pretty good. We both went out to their one-year anniversary party that they
we
had.
We did. That was a good time.
They had a tent set up outside. The place was packed. If you haven't been to Little Beaver yet and you're waiting for an excuse to go enjoy some delicious beer, here's your excuse. They support us, so we're going to ask you to support them. We also have a guest on the show today. Kathleen Lorenz, Town of Normal councilperson. We're going to speak to her. She's up for re-election this year.
It was good to get an incumbent in here. We've had all new candidates so far. And so she's got a little bit of take from her view of how things have been going in the city.
It's always interesting to hear that comparison between someone that's running for the first time and someone that's been in the seat before. But we spoke to her about the sports complex and the relationship between Normal and the city of Bloomington. I thought that was really interesting. And then we got into Uptown, of course, and started talking about some of her economic development ideas.
Yep. And here is Kathleen.
2-1. All right, welcome to Pod BN. We're here with Kathleen Lorenz, Town of Normal Council member. Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, we start off, everybody, just to get to know you a little bit. Tell us a little bit of your background, where you grew up, how long you've been in town.
So I'll need to go to the Wayback Machine for that one, Justin. Where I was born, actually, little known fact, was New Jersey, Somerville, New Jersey. But moved away from there when I was 6 with my family. We moved out to the Chicago suburbs, then a little suburb known as Wheaton, Illinois. Mm-hmm. It's quite matured now as a community. And so went to pretty much all my schooling there, then went to college at Purdue University, where I met my husband. And we have been married over 30 years. And 25 years ago, we landed here in Normal, Illinois, and we haven't left. We started our family here, raised two children, a son who's now 23 and a daughter who's 21. And we love Bloomington Normal.
So what brought you to Bloomington?
My husband's work. He works for R.R. Donnelly Printing Company, yeah. And they have, at the time, he was working at their plant in Pontiac. Now he works in a variety of different locations and is, you know, kind of on assignment to different locations throughout the country.
So your kids still in town?
They are not, no. They are probably part of a, you know, concerning trend of the college bound 20-year-old somethings that are leaving our state. So my son went to Purdue, our alma mater. He's studying engineering there as a grad student now. And then our daughter went to Southern Alabama to a school named Troy University on a soccer scholarship. So, you know, they had their reasons for departing our state. Obviously, we had a connection with Purdue, and the engineering school is strong there for our son, Stephen. And then for Kate, she liked warm weather and a beach, and I just couldn't deliver that for her here. So,
yeah.
So she's quite happy down there, and she's studying business.
Okay. So prior to council, I know you were on the Planning and Zoning Commission mm-hmm. in the Town of Normal. What sparked that interest? It's usually something with somebody that got them involved in that type
right.
of work.
Yeah, it's a good story, actually. I've always been very interested in current events, you know, I mean, as far back as grade school, you know, my parents had a Time magazine and I picked it up and figured out how to read it, yeah. you know, so I was kind of that nerdy kid. Then fast forward to when I did move here in the mid-90s, and I got to know Sonia Reese. And, of course, she is a longtime public servant of our community, and at the time was on the council. And, you know, we would have lunch together and visit and, you know, what's going on with the town? And it was just very inquisitive and grew very naturally. She has now, over the years, become a wonderful mentor and friend to me. And so I really attribute a lot of my involvement at that commission level to her, and then continued mentorship from her to the point where I'm at now.
And how long were you on planning?
You know, actually, I was on Zoning Board of Appeals from like 04 to 08, and then Planning Commission from 2008 to 2015, then when I was elected to council.
Okay, that's quite a while then.
Yeah, about what was that, 10, 12 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What were some of the things that stand out in your time on those boards and commissions? Any like big controversial issues or just things you found particularly interesting?
There were a few controversials. The one that from Planning Commission, I believe it was, stands in my mind is about chicken coops.
Okay.
Yeah.
We know a little something about that.
Yeah, so that's probably an idea that may yet find its time, but at the time we did vote it down, and then so did the council. But, you know, the interesting thing that stands out about both of those commissions is that it really is local government and local and democracy at work. So I often felt really invigorated after those meetings, no matter how simple or complex the topic might be, because you really heard from the community, and you heard testimonies, and you heard, you know, pleading at times, and you heard, you know, developers talking about their vision for a project. And, you know, it was to me the manifestation of what maybe you read about as far as, you know, our democracy happening right here. Isn't this cool? Mm-hmm. And so I just really enjoyed it and was really inspired by it. And so when the opportunity came along, suggested by Sonia, to consider the council, I decided to take the next step, and I'm glad I did. I have really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So this is your first term, right?
That's
were
correct.
On council in 2015.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that you decided to run again for re-election. What are leading up to like the early part of council, 2015, when you first get on a town council? What are some surprises? Because I'm sure you know you start off going from the Planning Commission and Zoning Board of Appeals, and you have an idea, you have your coffees or lunches mm-hmm. with Sonia, mm-hmm. and she kind of tells you some high-level stuff, but I'm sure there are surprises when you get on there.
Yeah, it's kind of like starting a new job, you know? So the first year, especially the cycle of budgets and capital project planning, all of those things, you almost have to go through a full year to really understand, okay, what's happening next, you know, the property tax levy, you know, all those markers in time on the annual calendar are certainly part of the learning curve. I would say that being on the commissions provide a tremendous advantage to your learning curve, because you're already familiar with the lingo that is part of municipal work, things about property use and subdividing and platting and replatting and all of those things, special use permits, you know, all of that that jargon, number one, and concepts kind of sprinkled into my experiences on those various commissions. And so I think I appreciate the fact that I had that experience going into my first term, and it certainly served me well.
Did you have a mentor that was serving on council with you when you first started that kind of took you under their wing?
No, but I would say not particularly, but I would say that they were all very welcoming. And a story that I'll tell is, you know, you get seated and assigned a seat, and it just so happened that I was at that time sitting next to Kevin McCarthy, and he just did a really nice job of saying, okay, you're ready for your first vote, and it was a real simple vote, like the omnibus agenda or something, you know, and so I did it, and he looked at me, he's like, you know, high five, you did it, and yeah. So that was really comforting and welcoming and friendly, mm-hmm. So I'll never forget that.
So this coming up on this election, there are three seats available. Mm-hmm. Tell me if I'm wrong. Three seats available mm-hmm. and eight candidates running, mm-hmm. including two incumbents, which right. would be you and R.C. McBride.
Correct.
What do you attribute, I guess, the fact that so many people are interested in running this cycle to?
I think a lot of it comes from the fact that longtime council member Jeff Ritson's not running. And so similar to 4 years ago when Sonia chose not to run again, both RC and I popped up out of the woodwork, okay? And we did not know that the other was planning to do this until we were, you know, out there saying we're doing this. So, so that was in 2015. So I think there's a natural inclination when there is an open seat for there to be interest from newcomers. Now, why is it not two or three, and why is it suddenly six, is a good question. And I would hazard to guess that it's probably part of the changes that I think have happened on a national level in terms of spirit and enthusiasm and desire to get involved since probably the 2016 and maybe again as a result of the 2018 elections.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much energy that happened there.
Can't be the pay.
That's what I hear.
26 cents an hour. Well, it's really great. But you don't do it for the pay. You don't do it for the pay by any means.
I'm always surprised because unlike Bloomington, Normal is a county or a citywide race. So how many signatures do you need to get on the ballot in Normal?
Yeah, it's steep. And this time it was especially steep. It was, I got like almost 500. So, and it's a percentage of the amount of voters that vote in the previous municipal election. So there was more that came out in the 2017 municipal election. Why? Well, one, it was a mayoral. And two, you know, I think that 2016 bump.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Bloomington's usually around a 100, give or take, right?
Because it's based 200. On their ward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean,
if even that.
Right.
Yeah.
Depends on the ward, the turnout in that ward for the previous municipal election. But that's what also surprises me about having so many candidates is how the requirement's
easy.
Not
yeah.
easy.
Yeah.
And you have some young candidates running in Normal, too. Mm-hmm. I think you do have one college student and then one, Joel, who we spoke to previously. Mm-hmm. I don't know his age, but he doesn't look too far from college. So,
yeah, I know.
I mean,
they start looking younger and younger.
Yeah,
Justin.
Yeah, that's probably
the older
true.
I get.
That's probably true. Let me ask, you serve or have served, correct me, on the Bloomington Normal Sports Commission, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a popular topic over the last year and a half has been the sports complex.
Oh, yeah.
So give me kind of one, I guess, highlight what it is for listeners that don't know, and then tell us kind of what the battle is, what people are trying to decide between and if it's right or not for the community.
Well, you know, this is something I could speak a lot on, and I'm just going to start with brevity, and then we can dig deeper if you'd like. But basically, it is a project that has been raised up as a result of some changes in availability of some currently used assets for particularly for soccer kids locally at the rec level as well as at like that travel club level. And so with the changes in the availability of that land that's out by the airport does not want to continue leasing it for that purpose. And they have lots of reasons why that are, you know, very legitimate and understandable.
That's off Ireland Grove, right?
Correct. Yeah, okay. Yeah. You know, kind of either referred to as PCSL fields or community fields, depending on which era you come from. So that's the trigger. And then, so, you know, all right, you go out and you look for some other green fields, right? Well, the opportunity that has been seized here is that do you look at replacing those fields in a way that's going to be an economic development project. And by that I mean, you know, rather than replace those fields one for one, that you look at, how could we maybe leverage this opportunity better for a growth opportunity for our community. We have some assets that we could leverage. We've got the fact that we're in the central part of the state, right at some crossroads of interstates. We have the fact that for a decade, and that doesn't seem to be waning, travel sports seems to be a big thing, pretty recession-proof industry, the youth sports. And that's where I can delve deeper because I lived it with both of my kids, and especially with my daughter.
Did your children play soccer?
My daughter did. My son did a little bit, but then he went more into baseball and football.
Okay.
Baseball had some travel associated with it. But our daughter did both basketball and soccer. And, you know, there was entire stretches of years there where we didn't take a family vacation in the summer because, you know, you're part of this youth sports industry that gets you caught up in programming every weekend, and you're going to this AAU basketball tournament, and then you're doing this 3v3 thing in the summer, and you know, it's crazy. You know, you find yourself in it, and you're like, wow, what is going on here? And so it's an industry all in of itself, and if you haven't been exposed to it, you probably think I'm crazy. So that's the industry that this community is looking to take advantage of, and is there a way that we bring this industry to this community, and what's the benefit to the community? Well, if you put that asset here that attracts other sports teams to come here for tournaments and expand it beyond just soccer, you look at, say, like lacrosse, you look at perhaps even configuring these fields so it could help for softball or additional softball or baseball, you know, really create this multi-sport complex. That's the issue now. It's not necessarily just replacing the PCSL fields. It's been morphed into what I consider an economic development project for the community that we would need to look at like any other industry that might be interested in working in this community.
So based on what you described, it sounds like a good thing. But obviously there are naysayers out there. So what's the other side saying?
I think there's a real hesitation on the part of a lot of us in the community to get ourselves involved in another venue that might be an albatross around our neck.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't take anybody probably a lot of thinking to think, well, what other albatrosses have we had? And, you know, people would relate it to the Coliseum, now the arena.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate because I don't think that we're necessarily looking at apples and apples there. I think it's a very different venue. And there were a lot of different circumstances that goes into the arena than I think into a sports complex. It's completely different industries.
Mm-hmm.
So there's differences there, apples and oranges. However, that doesn't really matter. You know, I think it's too close, it's too real, and it's, oh no, don't be plunking down $50 million for this. This just feels scary again. And those emotions are real, and we gotta honor that, you know?
My first thought, and this has been now well over a year ago that I first was sitting in on a presentation regarding the sports complex idea, was, it sounds nice and it sounds amazing, but similar to what you said, I know there are fears and concerns out there. It didn't seem like there was any talk of anywhere in the middle. It seemed like people were saying, we have these grass fields and we can go find these grass fields, or we can have this amazing complex. And I just thought, well, there's got to be something in the middle there, compromise of some sorts, where maybe we don't have to spend the $50 or $60 million or whatever it would be.
Right.
But we also can do more than a plowed old field. Where we can, I mean, I think of Champion Fields. You know, I mean, that's an amazing place. It hosts a lot of softball tournaments and that type of thing. And I love the idea of multi-use for sports. One of the ideas that really was interesting to me when it was presented was cricket.
That was the other sport. Yeah, it's huge.
Because we have such a population in this community that would love to have
and the regulation. Cricket field, I think, is like a circular field, is it not? It's a big field.
It's a big field. Yeah. Like we have, from what I understand, and I've never played cricket, what it is that we have cricket fields, but they aren't regulation.
Yeah.
So that community would really enjoy having some of those, and I think they deserve some because we have enough.
Right.
There was a drainage basin where I used to live in Normal by Savannah Green. I think that's what it's called.
Yes, like I know exactly. Down, I see it
by where that
Tawanda Avenue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but where Tawanda goes over the tracks.
Yeah,
there are people that are playing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it just seemed like there should be a better place. There's definitely seems to be a interest and a need for that.
Yeah. So you know, on this topic, I'm really staying the course on looking at it from a business perspective and really as an economic development opportunity, and trying to, you know, honor the emotions and the concerns that are out there, but really looking at it as a business opportunity, whether to take it or not. And, you know, like any business opportunity, well, you know, what public versus private dollars can be brought to the table. And I think that's, to keep it at that level will help to make, I think, a better decision than getting caught up in a lot of the emotion.
Was the talk to make it a publicly owned sports complex?
I don't think there's really ever been anybody that I've heard that said, you know, oh yeah, let's take this on, because I don't think anybody in either municipality, you know, has the money to do that.
Right.
So, I mean, I think there's always been that assumption of, okay, you know, who all can and what all can we, what all partners can we gather together to make this work?
So there was an initial proposal or presentation that was given. What's the current state?
Yeah, this company out of Florida, it was called SFA. Now, I can't remember what that stands for, but they're a reputable company that does these types of feasibility studies. And so Bloomington Normal and actually the Convention Visitor Bureau split the cost for that study. It was around, I don't know, $40,000 or $45,000. And so they did one of the better feasibility studies on any topic that I recall reading, and really brought it down to a very operational level pro forma of what could be if we built it at a certain scope. And to your point, Justin, about, you know, could you kind of do something halfway? There is a point at which, yeah, you can scale it back, but if you scale it back too much, then you really aren't in that market to draw the kinds of tournaments that are going to make this thing profitable.
And we've seen that in Bloomington with the arena, right? That's been one of the downsides of the arena, as they say it's too big for mini events and too small.
You want to avoid that mistake.
Right.
Yeah. I wondered if you had heard that same sort of comment about that. So I think that you have to scale it right. The other thing that they introduced and said, you know, in this climate, it's a must that you have to have some sort of indoor facility with it. And you could build a nice big, like, building structure, or you could do something more that is a little more economical in the form of a dome. And so I think it's the dome is what they recommended in their study. And so that added some dollars in there for it, for the whole project, but it allows you that programming, you know, 50-some weeks out of the year, as opposed to maybe just 15 or 20 for just the outdoors. And I looked at their estimation for even the programming in the outdoor, and they were very, very conservative in terms of what they thought the outdoor could be programmed at. You know, knowing the industry like I did at least 10 years ago when I was, you know, on that circuit with my kids, you know, I think that they could probably program it twice than what they estimated, but I'd rather them estimate low, right? So that's why I feel really good about the feasibility study. So now where has it been, you know, what's been going on since? The town of Normal, and I'm going to just brag on the staff because they really are good at this. As long as I've been on the council, it's always been clear to me that any kind of feasibility study that comes in, they always do sort of their checking and verifying. So Doug Damery from our Parks and Rec has really done just a recheck and a sanity check with going out to many of the same organizations, clubs, and sports teams and so forth that the consultant talked to, and doing a verification of all the numbers. And he feels that they were spot on, if not they were conservative. So I feel good that if we were to move forward on this, the feasibility study was done well, it's been double checked, and so you will have a solid pro forma. Now the next step, of course, is what investors can you bring to the table to get the thing done?
I don't want to spend the whole time talking sports complexes.
I know, yeah.
But
I told you,
just,
I warned you.
Yeah. Just two quick things that I've heard about it. I just wondered if you could say fact or fiction. One, I've heard that the consulting group is part of a broader company that also owns a company that builds sports complexes.
That is a fact in that they have two sides of their company. They have feasibility study, and then they will manage it if you want to.
Okay.
I don't know that we've made that decision. That's too far down the road. Yeah.
Okay. And the other thing is that during the presentation, according to their projections, that it was not projected to be profitable from an operational standpoint going forward. Was that a part of the presentation?
They showed at least a break even, and then in the operation itself, and then there was another point in time after about 10 years, I think, where you needed to do some replacement and some significant capital replacement projects on the turf. And so you saw those numbers go back down.
Okay.
Now, where the these venues are not necessarily money makers themselves. Otherwise, you'd have a lot of private businesses building, you know, green fields and concession stands. Where the money comes in and where the economic development story is in what it would do to bring visitors and people to this community to fill our hotels, to eat in our restaurants, and to fill up their gas tanks. That's the economic development behind these venues.
Okay. So this is one project that has brought Bloomington City Council and Normal Town Council together with in conversation over the last, since you've been on council, the last 4 years. There has been others, but there's a perception, I think, in the public that the two don't get along. Mm. So can you touch on that? Tell me what your experience is working across the Division Street, if you
will. Yeah, yeah. You know, 4 years ago when I ran, and I'm going to run on it again, you know, the need to cooperate and the need to collaborate. And I'm even going to add to that this time and say it's Bloomington Normal and the county. We all really need to work harder at staying in better communication at all levels, staff and the electeds. And it was probably one of the things that I was the most disappointed about when I really got into my role on council is that, oh, you know, this relationship isn't as good as I thought, or the collaboration isn't as easy as it seems, you know? I mean, we sit here and we think, yeah, of course we should collaborate. I don't know, it's not rocket science. And yet you get into the personalities and the history and, you know, all of this stuff, and you go, oh, boy, I see. You know, it's like, think of your extended family and all those sometimes pieces of drama that go on over, you know, decades and get brought out at Thanksgiving dinners and things like that. So I've gotten a greater appreciation for the depth and the history behind the relationship between at least the two cities. And so I think I'm an optimist. I know that I'm an optimist. And so I think there's a optimistic view going forward because we have a new day here with two new, and we didn't plan it, but it just happened that way, two new city managers. And so it's an opportunity for us to restart, you know, move forward. Different ideas, different personalities, and it's a new day. And so I think that we should not give up hope, that we should, despite differences in even how we govern, ward versus an at-large, different styles of leadership, there should be no reason that should hold us back from collaborating. And I would go so far as to say that I would like to do a better job with reaching out to county board members as well.
What does that look like to collaborate, though? I mean, from my perspective, it doesn't necessarily have to be a joint meeting or anything like that. It could be a town council person calling a city council person and saying, let's go grab breakfast.
Absolutely.
And I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, publicized or anything. I think just more of that communication, or as you said, the county board level as well, more of that communication. And I think it's going to take the electeds to put it upon themselves to do that.
Right. And I think some of that grassroots is happening already. I mean, I have a good relationship with Ward 8 Alderwoman Diana Howman. We have breakfast, in fact, quite frequently together. I have a good relationship with Karen Schmidt. So Scott Black, I serve with him on the community, on the Convention Visitor Bureau. So I think there are examples like that with, you know, kind of one-on-one relationships. Where we need to get a better coordination is with the city managers, and that, like I said, you know, we've got a new day there, new set of city managers. We may have a new county administrator soon. So, you know, I think that's an opportunity as well. And then, of course, with the leadership, with the mayor. And so we need to make sure, and with the county board president. So, you know, it's at the Alderwoman, alderman, councilman, councilwoman level, it's at the staff level, and it's at the leadership level. We've got to get all three of those pieces of the puzzle going, and I don't think we've gotten that yet, but that's what it's going to take.
Okay. Is there anyone in the Bloomington or Normal candidate pool that you see where you already have a relationship with them or are particularly excited to work with them on things, like what they have to say?
You know, it's kind of early yet. You know, we'll start running into each other more at forums and, you know, opportunities like this to hear each other. So, you know, I pledge to work with whoever is elected.
All right. We're talking with Normal Town Councilwoman Kathleen Lorenz. We're getting close to the halfway point, and what we usually like to do is do a rapid fire.
This is scary for me. Okay.
Don't be scared. I'll say a word. You tell me the first thing that comes to mind. It does not have to be a one-word answer, but try to keep it less than five or six.
Uh-oh.
And if there are topics that we want to talk about after the break, we can always bring them back. Okay? Okay.
And if you go over five, we're going to have the sound of the Amtrak train going through Normal. Blast over you. Just kidding.
All right. Are we ready?
Mm-hmm.
First one is TIF districts.
An economic development tool.
Shops at College Hills.
Still very vibrant and relevant.
Mark Peterson.
A good leader. Enjoyed working with him.
Uptown.
A great place to be.
Illinois State University.
A tremendous asset and a great institution.
Portillo's.
Good hot dogs.
Connect Transit.
Necessary.
Mayor Chris Kuss.
A good leader. Learned a lot from him.
And the last one is urban sprawl.
Not good.
Okay. We'll take
You did all right.
You did okay. That wasn't bad at all. We'll take a quick break and be right back with Kathleen Lorenz. We want to take this opportunity to thank our sponsor, Play Normal Esports, located at 802 South El Dorado Road in Bloomington. On February 2nd, you can involve yourself in a Call of Duty tournament. Also, remember, on weekends, you can bring your tabletop game in and play on their large table. So if you don't have room in your house and want to play a tabletop game, they have those as well. Find out more information at PlayNormalEsports.com or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
So, Kathleen, I've got in front of me here your priorities or your platform, mm-hmm. another word for that. They are good stewardship of town's resources, second, economic growth and development, and third, work with partners to sustain our town's vitality. So I was reflecting on the first one, good stewardship of town's resources. Mm-hmm. And you know, you've lived in the suburbs, you lived in Indiana for a while. Mm-hmm. What is it about Normal that keeps you here and that you think is something that we want to retain and leverage well here in Normal?
Right. You know, I think it's got a lot of assets that make it desirable. And, you know, a lot of people say it's a great place to raise a family, and that is true. But I don't think that's our only lane that we can operate in. We have the universities. We have a state university. We have a private university. We have referring to Illinois Wesleyan, I'm kind of looking at Bloomington Normal as a whole here. We have a good community college. We're strong in education. We have for years enjoyed a strong and fairly recession-proof business partner in State Farm and Country Financial. We have good health care. So there's a lot of things about this community that check a lot of boxes for people. Both communities have a strong downtown, you know, a downtown center. You go to some of the suburbs, they don't necessarily have a main street, right? So we, you know, both of these communities still have that iconic main street or downtown, uptown, whatever you want to call it. And I think there's strong neighborhoods too. Good history here. So those are things that not a lot of communities have, and maybe we sometimes take for granted, right? And so that has been what has worked for my husband and me and our children. You know, when we had and at times thought about, you know, well, do you take this opportunity with a such and such job or a promotion or this or that? We loved this place. Great schools, you know, at the K through 12. So lots of activities. You know, you go on and on. And so it's for that reason that I ran, actually, you know, 4 years ago. I was really committed, and I still am very committed to continue public service, because this has been a community that has been firsthand so good to me and what I've experienced with my husband and me and our children, that I want to keep it that way or help keep it that way for generations to come. You know, and so maybe I don't use, you know, the Children's Discovery Museum like I did or the zoo as much as I did, but I know those assets are here and I want them to stay here for that next wave of families and young people and young professionals. So I'm committed. I love this community, without a doubt.
Yeah. Something that comes to mind when you think of Normal is all the change that's happened in Uptown and mm-hmm. your time on mm-hmm. on both planning and the council
sure.
here. So I went to ISU in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot has changed since my time there.
Yeah.
So with so much change
how do you feel like that balance has been struck between retaining what's good about that downtown / uptown experience versus, you know, moving towards what that vision is for the future?
Yeah. You know, I got my master's, my MBA at ISU. Shortly after I moved here in the mid-90s and finished that up in the late 90s. And I remember meeting, group mates, at the coffee house and, being in the old downtown area. And it was very much kind of that college town vibe, and it was fine, but it wasn't really memorable, right? Now what we have created there is a more memorable place that I think serves both the university community and the parents and families that send their children here, right? As well as then the local people, the townies, as we like to, call the people here, right? I experienced this sort of assessment of communities firsthand when we went through the ritual of looking at different schools for our children. And particularly my daughter went to a lot of different colleges and campuses as part of her recruiting process. And you want to have a nice backdrop for the university setting. As a parent, I'm looking at, how safe does this feel? What's the transportation? Is there a place where she can shop? Is there a mall nearby? These are all things that are very important to a prospective student and their family when assessing Illinois State or Illinois Wesleyan. And so I think the development in Uptown has definitely upped our game there. And it seems related that ISU has maintained and perhaps even grown in its enrollment at a time when a lot of universities' enrollments have been decreasing. Mm-hmm. So anecdotally, I can say, too, that, on parents' weekends or move-in weekend, on more than one occasion, I've heard a parent maybe walking down with their child, down North Street or Beaufort, and I kid you not, I heard this. I was like, yeah, doesn't this kind of feel like Naperville? That Chicago suburb? Oh, cool. And I'm like, we've arrived, if that's a measure of success.
So that's a measure of success for you, feeling like a Naperville or Schaumburg or something? Like that.
I don't want to go there specifically. I want to broaden it and say we have created a space that is appealing to the visitor. And whether that's mm-hmm. Naperville for you or whether that's, Galena or, Kewaunee or, we have created a space that is appealing to the visitor who lands here and goes, well, isn't this cute?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important in terms of upping our game in terms of our placemaking. So I do think that it has been a good thing for two reasons. One is we plan our work and we work our plan. That's our mantra in Normal, going way back, several mayors ago. And that has served Normal well insofar as planning their work and then stay in the course and work in that plan. And there are some that'll say, well, you can't just have blinders on. You can't just always be shoehorning this plan in, 15, 20, 25 years later. And we're not. We understand that plans need to be molded and morphed and so forth. But by and large, we set a vision and we work to accomplish that. I think in some places you see where you have lots of plans and little execution or partial execution.
Any place you're thinking of in particular?
I'll let you suggest that, Justin. I think given the two alternatives, I'd rather plan my work and work my plan. And yes, take into account that things change over 5, 10, 15, 20 years. But by and large, I think the plan has been good. Secondly, this is an age-old, forever-in-time argument. The old versus the new. Mm-hmm. Progress. Is progress good? So in many ways, this is not surprising, particularly the latest project that's out there on the table for removing the three buildings
yep.
and putting the Trailside East building. That's, to me, a classic argument. And it's, there's something kind of cool about that argument, to raise it up and to tease it out and hear all sides and try to come to a good solution.
I think when I think of Uptown, and I'm a Bloomington person, so I'm always comparing it to downtown, no matter how much they don't want me to. The one thing I really appreciate was the initial things that were done all had to do with infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when I compare that to downtown Bloomington, it's desperate need of some improved infrastructure. Mm-hmm. I think the question of, at least, you know, even when speaking with Joel and Stan and some friends that are involved, is where's the finish line of
a really good point.
Of government mm-hmm. involvement?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can do, some people think, let's fix the infrastructure and then let private
mm-hmm.
private stuff happen. Some people say, well, let's give it a little shot in the arm and then see
right.
what happens.
Right.
So how do you respond to that when people say, you know, I appreciate what's been done so far, but let's get the government out of the private development and see what happens now.
Right. Well, Uptown, you've got Uptown 1.0, and then you have a little fuzzier Uptown 2.0. And basically the difference is Uptown 2.0 is south of the tracks. And the topic that links those two together is the underpass, okay? I am of the opinion that given the scenario that we're in, again, looking at, you know, how are things now, how is it playing out against the plan that we've been working with for, you know, since the early 2000s? How far do we continue to go? And I recognize that there is a moment here that we may need to seize where we pump the brakes a little bit, okay? We can't just be build, okay? Because we have to see how things shake out right now with some pretty cataclysmic changes happening with one of our biggest employers, right? I kind of consider us almost kind of in a renaissance period right now. And, you know, this, we could call this renaissance period life after a skinny State Farm, you know? What does that look like for Bloomington Normal? And we're in that period right now. And why one of my platform's items is also economic development. I think economic development is job one outside of the first one being good steward of our resources. Of course, we need to take care of basic public service, public safety, roads, and so forth. But we need to make sure that we are nurturing this community, building it, rebuilding it, the economic infrastructure of it, so that we can live and thrive in a skinny State Farm environment, okay? And I think that's going to, you know, the skinny State Farm is going to be good. They need to, you know, be skinnier, evidently. You know, they've made that choice, that strategic choice. And you can't knock an organization for having to make some strategic changes as it appears that they are doing. So we have to adapt to that. And so as we adapt that, here's where we need to look at our plans and say, all right, in my mind, I think, let's finish out Uptown 1.0. Finish that out. And that's why, you know, all we really have left there in 1.0 are building 4 and 5. The original plan called for 5 buildings to surround that circle. We've built the first 3, the CDM, the One Uptown Circle, and the City Hall, Mobile Transportation Center. So that's buildings 1, 2, and 3. 4 and 5 is what's left. 4 is the one that is Trailside East. 5, you know, that depends on whether there's a willing developer out there at some point that is interested in, you know, developing that land. But that's the horizon that I see right now that is a reasonable chunk of work to work on. Now, Kathleen is feeling, because of my concern on being a good steward of resources, that anything beyond that we might need to pump the brakes on. Because of these, what I'm going to consider unsteady times. And, you know, what I like to say to promote my experience from commission to now council is that I believe I've got the steady leadership in these unsteady times. And now would not be the right time for shock and awe of a lot of inexperience to come in. I'm always, you know, eager. Obviously, there's going to be at least one new member on the council. And so to get some new eyes and ears and ideas on situations will be great. But I really don't think it would be the time to have wholesale change out. We need some steady leadership in these unsteady times.
So some may argue why are we worried about expanding, even going further with a plan on Uptown 1.0 mm-hmm. when we have one Uptown in a situation where right. I still can't find, you know, at least.
Yeah.
So
well, there's a pretty big reason why we need to really finish buildings 4 and 5, or lots 4 and 5, as I like to call them, because the TIF district is there. Like it or not, the Tax Incremental Financing District is there, and it's there now until 2038. And if we sat on those two lots and did nothing with them, that's like sitting, if you had something valuable that you could, you know, maybe if you were in Las Vegas and you had a pile of chips, mm-hmm. okay, and that's like, and somebody gave you that pile of chips, this might not be a great analogy, but what I'm trying to say is there's an asset there, a tool for economic development that if we did nothing would sit idle and be a waste. And the whole idea for a tax incremental financing district is to take what they call blight, which at once upon a time, the entire area was met enough criteria to be considered that. Now, I didn't think it was blighted in a really extreme sense, but it was underdeveloped.
Is it like the age of the buildings and the
I'm not sure all what the criteria.
They look at things like that.
So it qualified back in the early 2000s as for TIF. And so so we've been working to develop that. And so that's what TIF is all about. I mean, TIF is about, you know, putting a tool out there that is a way to take property values from, you know, sea level up to some level of elevation. And that's really in the long run, again, one of the things I've learned from my time on council is, you know, take the long view. In the long run, that is a good thing, because if we did nothing, those parcels will always be property values at sea level, right? And so our big recipients of property tax, of course, are our school districts. And so they'll see no, hope for improvement, or little hope, maybe not no hope, because, you know, yes, there could always be a benevolent philanthropic investor that comes along and says, I want to give you my fortune here. But absent of that, more than likely, these properties will kind of just languish at, you know, sea level. The TIF puts some money on the table, if you will. It says, you know what, developer or investor or, you know, philanthropic person, if you help develop these parcels, we got a deal for you. You're going to develop it, and now instead of it being worth $100,000 of property tax value to our kids in schools, your development is going to take it up to $500,000, just fictitious dollars sure. here. And so now the superintendents are like, oh, great, this is five times the value. But there's a catch. Because for the first 10 years or 12 years or whatever the deal of the project is, the developer wants part of his investment back. So you won't get all $500,000 at first. But after the, let's say, 12 years, you'll get $500,000 worth of property tax value. Would you take that deal?
Oh, you're asking me?
Yeah. Or would you rather sea level, or maybe a little bit higher?
I think what I would look at is I would be careful about what is an asset and what is a liability. So we tend to think of a built structure as it being an asset that we can use for something. Mm-hmm. But we need to price in the ongoing maintenance costs and the long-term expectation that there would continue to be a building of that size, of that function there. That's what I think is missing in a lot of talk of building new structures. Think of it like a street. So mm-hmm. you build a street out to some place, and then people build houses on that street. So on the one hand, the street is an asset because people can get places. On the other hand, the city now has a liability to repave that street.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a system set aside to be able to proactively fund that liability, mm-hmm. then you end up in situations like we are right now. The city can't just decide, like, oh, we're not going to have, you know, Street X anymore. We're right. not going to have Ireland Grove
right.
anymore.
Right.
Didn't end up working out, so we're not going to do that anymore. So I just think that would be the
that's an interesting point.
There.
Okay, and so then that's where, this is great. That's where then you've created this asset, And now the government part is really out. Because the only part that the government plays in this is that we brought the TIF to the table. So we brought the tool for the developer to be interested in this kind of deal of I'm able to take a portion for a period of time of the property taxes, the incremental difference, to pay myself back. And see, that is from it's all part of the financing package. You know, when we go and apply for a mortgage, the bank is going to want to know what assurances can you give me that you're going to have certain revenue streams to pay this back over years. So this is part of their financing package that they're able to say, you know, we're going to get, you know, $100,000 a year for the year for the life of the TIF. And so that's all part of their financing. And, you know, banks have gotten a little choosier lately about, you know, what gets financed and what doesn't. So I think that's helped bring TIFs along in terms of, you know, how much they're used and how widespreadly they're used. You have that part where the government has gotten involved and taxpayer dollars have been part of the deal. Now you build the asset. The developer is on the hook for creating space that is desirable. The only reason why they're going to do this is if they feel like they can fill this building up. This is on their backs now. And this was a lot of the training that I got as a planning commissioner. You really got to kind of look face to face with these developers and realize that there's kind of a delicate balance between, you know, yeah, they come to your community and they want to be your friend and build something. But on the other hand, you know, they're in the business of, you know, they're business people. They're in the business of making a profit. I get it, you know. So, you know, you have to understand that sort of delicate dance that you've got going. So they want to, and they're only going to build this building if they know that they've got tenants. So in the case of the multi-use building for Trailside East, that is more than just retail. The biggest piece of that is the commercial tenants, of which there's like 6 or 8, and they've got 70 or 80% of them locked up.
Yeah.
And so that's going to bring 200 or maybe 300, I've heard kind of two different numbers, but in that range of employees. And they believe, because the biggest tenant is Farnsworth, they're doing this, and they're moving their local and consolidating their local offices here because they're doing this as a recruitment tool. They believe that, you know, the young professional like my kids are looking for that urban setting, walkability, transportation, you know, not that urban sprawl. And so they look at this as they're wanting this as a recruiting tool so that when they bring that, you know, Illinois engineering grad or the Purdue engineering grad, they got a nice backdrop to show them where they're going to come to work every day. So it's upon capitalism, okay, and the entrepreneur to make sure that that's not a liability.
So okay. Then how did what broke down as far as the existing building?
Perfect segue. Yep. Yeah. So you got to remember that thing was doomed early on. It was part of the 2008 maybe debacle of financial meltdown.
Oh, it was back that far.
Yes. Okay. Yes. It was a Champaign-based developer that dug the hole in the ground, filled it, you know, made a foundation, and then pulled out.
That hole was there for quite a while.
It was. It was lovingly referred to as the hole in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I think my kids on the way to the Children's Discovery Museum maybe asked me about 5,000 times what they were
what is it? Right. And so, you know, there are a lot of critics about how that hole in the ground got filled. And, you know, if it hadn't been this hole in the ground, sunk cost, all those awful things, truly a liability at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we would have had a different set of development criteria or outcomes, okay? But we were in a situation, we needed to fill this hole. So along comes the developer, I think it's Tartan, right? Mm-hmm. And he has a project. And, you know, it filled the hole. And in many ways, you know, on a lot of good, checked a lot of positive boxes, you know, in terms of bringing assets to the community that we wanted. There was a need, a desire to have a complimentary hotel to the Marriott that didn't compete with them on the conference space, right? And so, but yet had more allowed the Marriott to say, well, you know, we can have bigger conferences because we've got an adjacent hotel neighbor. And then it also brought some much desired higher end residential living. Okay, so it did those two things. And thirdly, it also did it was our first step towards bringing employment. And in this case, it was the town. Okay, and you could ridicule us for that. I get it. But what you're seeing happen is, and probably the right way, you know, more truly the way it should have been, is what's happening at Trailside East, where a developer comes and says, okay, it's not a hole in the ground, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm starting fresh, good project, clean project, and this is what I want to build. And I can bring 7 or 8 tenants here that want to bring 200 to 300 employees here. Mm-hmm. So that's the part that is really part of the whole plan of this uptown area, is to have kind of the three legs of the stool, employment, residential, and retail.
Yeah. I can definitely tell your experience on the commissions and the town has served you well as far as understanding these. I understand at a high level what the concept of a TIF is.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to go a step deeper before and need to. It's still on my to-do list, I guess.
Well, so the other one, do we have time to give you my cookie example?
Sure.
That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. I was trying to talk about sea level versus elevation earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not pure, but we got a piece of property that's worth one cookie. And I got some cookies, and you have some cookies, okay? And we're going to put cookies in, and now this land is going to be worth 5 cookies, okay? And Justin, you're the school district, and you're thinking, I got 5 cookies. But you and I, as investors in this, we got a banker, we got a mortgage lender that's like, hey, pay us back. And so kind of part of the deal is that we get to keep some of those 5 cookies for 12 years. But Justin, you wait. In 12 years, you get all 5 cookies for the rest of your life. I promise.
Yeah.
We're going to just pay ourselves back for a little while and have our cookies. And you get them for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Would you take that deal? That's what I was trying to, suggest to you.
Yep.
It's not pure. Andrew Hune, our wonderful, amazing finance director, when I shared this with him, he kind of looked at me a little quizzical, and he's like, okay, maybe that's okay. So it's not pure, I get it. But it's a way that I keep it straight in my head.
Yeah, it helps to break it down like that.
Is there concern with losing the surface parking?
Oh, and, boy.
I mean,
yeah.
And trust me, where this is coming from me, is that I'm very much in I'm in favor of parking meters sometimes, you know, in mm-hmm. the right spot. So I'm not advocating for more surface parking. But as a culture and a society, we very much love our surface parking lots.
We do.
And that is the last one
mm-hmm.
in Uptown.
Yeah.
So what's the plan to address the public's fear of
concerns,
that,
yeah.
concerns of that when that happens?
Council has directed, and I think they just completed it, council directed staff to do a complete assessment or reassessment of parking and how it's allocated right now, the surface parking.
Mm-hmm.
We have a little over 1,000 spaces mm-hmm. in Uptown surface, and some of them are allocated to like reserve spaces for businesses. And that doesn't serve like the three of us that are coming in for an hour or 2 hours for, you know, coffee at a coffee shop somewhere or shopping or what have you. So the Trailside East project is going to really motivate us to do a rethinking and a reallocation of, you know, the 8-hour employee should probably park in the garage.
Yes.
And leave it open for you and I to come and go every 2 hours.
Right.
And so while we're taking, without a doubt, we're taking spaces away as the result of that building, we're trying to mitigate that by reorganizing how the spaces are used anyway. And there is a possibility, there's some surface lot that's being used for some other kind of staging area across college by the water treatment plant that would add in, I'm not sure, not a ton, maybe a couple of dozen spaces, maybe more, maybe 30 spaces.
I always felt, I mean, and it's not me, I've read it in a number of books and articles, that we have it backwards in both communities.
Yes, you know? I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, we we charge for the parking decks and give free parking on
right,
the streets.
Right.
So why is that? Why can't we reverse that? I mean, of course there will be mass
I'll
hysteria.
I'll let you be on council when you make that decision.
There'll be mass hysteria. But I think, honestly, that Normal has done a good job of kind of going back to your comment earlier about you plan and then you execute mm-hmm. the plan. Because by the time you're on to the next thing, the old thing's kind of gone. Like people have gotten used to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wonder why can't we just make that switch and say, you know what, park in all the decks for free, all you want, but we're going to charge you to start parking on the
street.
Right,
and I mean, metered parking has gotten a lot more sophisticated with apps.
Oh, it's so, yes.
And I was just recently in Madison, okay, so larger community, university. So anytime you plunk a university down in a community, you got parking problems,
right.
You know. And, you know, you walk down a few spaces and there's a kind of a kiosk there and you can interact with it either directly with your credit card or, you know, an app and,
app,
you know. So I know Champaign has some of those, Champaign-Urbana. So it's not difficult, but yeah. I think
some,
I have seen those on campus.
On GLT, over by GLT's parking lot.
Yes, by the Alamo.
My
app. Yep.
I don't know.
And so much of it is just psychological, too, because if you think about, people are very willing, people used to be willing in a mall. I don't know how much people walk around the mall anymore.
Oh, very good point. Yeah.
But people would be willing to go into Kohl's and mm-hmm. walk all the way over to Sears mm-hmm. to go shopping and then walk back through Kohl's to get in their car.
Isn't that an interesting phenomenon?
That,
yeah.
But they won't park in the parking deck and walk, you know, across, I can't recall where that street is, but they won't walk across the street over to the loop to go into the Children's Discovery Museum.
Right,
that's
right.
too far.
Yeah.
And it's so much of that, like, that idea of a sense of place and of drawing from one thing to mm-hmm. another. You know, in a mall, you're moving from store to store to store, and there's, like, something to pull you and draw
right.
you through that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, if you don't design the pedestrian right-of-ways in an attractive way,
right.
it doesn't kind of pull people through like that. Both towns, I think, struggle in that regard.
And, you know, I think about this because parking is an issue with our Normal library, and we're trying to, you know, Brian Chase there is you know, trying to do, you know, as much as he can in his current space, and we've helped him get some additional parking adjacent to his lot. So, but I'm gonna talk about it in this sense is that at this point in my life, I understand that, you know, what we were just saying, like, oh, you know, you walk further in a mall, or, you know, and we have the ability to be mobile right now, right, and to be safe and feel that, you know, as long as there's a identified path, we're okay. However, I remember when I had, you know, a 2-year-old and, you know, a baby on my hip and, you know, a diaper bag and, you know, somebody was crying and, you know, all of that going on.
When you have a stroller, you're suddenly very, very sympathetic to the needs of people
right.
in wheelchairs.
Like if you've ever had like a crying baby on an airplane, you know, you don't mind another crying baby on the airplane. I had that. So, you know, so those life experience kind of help you realize, okay, so for those of us who are mobile, does it, you know, let's maybe take that responsibility to be able to, I'll walk a little further, you know, but for the grace of God, you know, any one of us could be in a situation where we're not mobile.
Sure.
And we might be on crutches or in a wheelchair or, you know, some other impairment that really we do need that close by. So I'm all for the fact that the town has done and is in the process of doing kind of the reassessment, where that takes us and whether we go that next step of turning it around so that, you know, there is some paid parking on the street, but still allowing enough for truly those who need it. You know, the moms with the 3 kids hanging off of them and, you know, I mean, I've been there and, you know, sometimes walking with, you know, an elderly person, you really realize just how delicate distance is, you know, for them. So we have to think about all of that.
All right, we're getting close to the end, so
okay.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, it's been fun, but I still want to give you an opportunity to mention anything you want to mention, any events you have coming up, a website, Facebook,
sure.
how people get a hold of you.
Yeah. Well, I just launched my New Twitter and new Instagram, Lorenz 4, as in the number 4, normal. And so I'm migrating away from my personal Twitter and Instagram for the time of the campaign. So if you know me on my personal Twitter and Instagram, find me over at Lorenz for normal. I'm going to kind of just quiet down on my personal one. And then a longstanding page that I've had out there. I have lots of followers, and I appreciate that. I'd love to have some more at Friends of Kathleen Lorenz on Facebook. And that is also my website, friendsofkathleenlorenz.com. And those would be places where you can tap in and find out what I'm all about and what I believe in, my background, and particularly on the social media, where I'm at, where I'm going, so forth. I do have a calendar of events on my website as well.
Okay. And so we have been speaking with Kathleen Lorenz, current Normal Town Council person, who is running for re-election. The election is on April 2nd, so make sure you get out and vote. And I think we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for coming in. Enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, this was good and really good for somebody like me who likes to get into details. So I appreciate this.
So, Justin, our first incumbent. Did that go as you expected it to go?
I don't know if anything ever goes exactly as I expected, but I thought she brought, you know, she portrayed the experience that she had, not just on the council, but the 10 years she served on the Zoning Board of Appeals and the Planning Commission, and the value that she thinks that adds to her serving on council.
I'm always happy to talk about planning topics. I know it isn't everyone's cup of tea. It can be kind of technical, but it is so important.
Yeah, I agree. I think it went well, and I'm excited to hear some more comments come on both from the Town of Normal and the City of Bloomington in our upcoming podcast. We want to make sure we thank our sponsors, Play Normal Esports. That's where we record this each and every time, so pay them a visit. They have all kinds of games, 30 gaming PCs, 10 Xbox Ones, 10 PS4s. They also have normal gadgets attached to it, so if you have any gadgets like cell phones, computers that break, see them for that.
And also definitely want to thank our newest sponsor again, Low Beaver Brewery. Go out there and enjoy some of their innovative creations. What's that address, Justin?
It is at 16 Currency Drive, Unit B. That's over by the Big Gold's Gym. Go enjoy some of their famous stouts.
All right, are we done?
Let's be done. We have been speaking with Kathleen Lorenz, current. Let me just redo that so Tyson can edit it.
Yeah, take that out of the universe.
We've been speaking to Kathleen Lorenz,